Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, we'll speak with our correspondent traveling in Europe following the immigrant crisis there. Migrant or refugee, the terms can mean a big difference for the immigrants to Europe.
Refugee, the most important definition is that you must cross an international frontier. You must be fleeing conflict.
We hear good news and bad about human longevity. And we'll consider word of Bano joining the Billionaires Club. It's here on The Voice of America. The stream of refugees into Europe continues today, and VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez is following this story. He's traveling around the region to meet with the refugees and see what they're doing. Right now, he's in Budapest, Hungary, and joins us on the line. Luis, what is going on today?
Well, as you said, the stream continues, Susan. And what is happening is that with Hungary lifting many of the restrictions that it had imposed on the refugees, word is getting back to those who are at the earlier stages of this pipeline. What I am hearing from the border now is I just got off the phone with a Hungarian relief worker who is helping deal with the influx. He described a very dire situation as people are hearing of the assured passage through Hungary. They're deciding to make the trip. Some have been holding in Macedonia. Some have been in Serbia. They're making their way toward Hungary. The Hungarian government has said it is reinforcing its border controls. There is a fence with razor-sharp wire that exists there. The government said that it will repair the holes in which many of these refugees have been using to cross. Others have been using railroad track, rail lines, to come from Serbia into Hungary. And so that is a situation that the Hungarian government is very much bracing for. On the other end, you have Austria, which has been receiving the migrants very efficiently, taking them from the trains that they're arriving from in Vienna, and putting them onto trains bound for Germany, where many of the migrants tell me is, in fact, where they want to go.
And how can they handle all these people? What supplies are there for them?
There's been an incredible outpouring of goodwill donations on the part of private citizens. The government has also been facilitating matters in that they've installed water faucets. There are washing facilities. There are signs pointing them to where they need to go to catch the train to the border. But mainly it's private relief organizations, private individuals showing up with bags of food, offering assistance. There are even people driving into Budapest, both from within Hungary and also people from the Czech Republic who I talked to, who are driving their private cars and offering transportation to the border. Now, this is a situation that the Hungarian government has warned people against. They are warning people that the law does not allow private citizens to transport people who are undocumented across Hungarian territory. Nonetheless, the people I spoke to, the volunteers, said that when they hear the news reports of the suffering of these refugees, they cannot help but come and do whatever they can personally to ease what they see as purely a matter of human suffering.
Luis, please describe to us the enormity of this problem, the number of peoples, the crowds.
The Hungarian government estimates that 10,000 people have come in within the last few days. They anticipate many thousands more coming through. Concerns expressed by observers across Europe, really. These are opinions you hear from in the UK as well, all the way east to Hungary, is a concern about the effect that this influx may have on the demographics of Europe. The entire continent basically has a very low birth rate when it comes to native-born Europeans. The number of foreign-born people is increasing, consistently. And so there are concerns about demographic change. When I've asked the volunteers if they have, this concern in mind, they say, sure, but it's not something that's immediate. If it happens, it will be in the next generation. And for now, what we have in front of us is a situation where human beings are suffering and where they are fleeing for their lives.
And Luis, when I spoke with you yesterday, you mentioned that many of these people would really rather be at home than be in this situation going to another country.
I've interviewed dozens of refugees in the days that I've been here, Susan, and I can tell you that not one has said that he or she is happy making this trip. Every single one has said, if things were okay in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, I would be home. That's what I'm getting consistently from people. There's also some expressions of frustration and anger on why the United States is not doing more to end the fighting in Syria. They said that if the fighting in Syria, as one example, were to end, there would be absolutely no reason to leave their country.
Well, thank you very much, Luis, for speaking with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Susan.
Joining me here in the studio is reporter Andrew Palchevsky with a look at what is being said today in social media. Andrew, what do you have to share today?
Well, the big trending hashtag this morning is hashtag light the dark. Now, this is something that's out of Australia, where tens of thousands of people across Australia are gathering overnight and holding candlelight vigils for these refugees that are coming from their countries through Europe. And they're saying, we'll take you in, we'll support your cause. And so there are beautiful pictures and social media, people have these handmade signs and candles, tens of thousands of candles lighting up the night across cities in Australia. So sending a strong message out of that country. Now, what's interesting about this is that this hashtag light the dark started in Australia, but it's already a worldwide trending topic. So I wouldn't be surprised if other countries started emulating this in the coming days and used this, what they saw on social media, and said, oh, we can do this as well. And if we see hashtag light the dark Australia, hashtag light the dark Germany, and starting to see it become country specific.
This was set off a lot by the picture of that poor little boy who drowned. And it's really lit up, so to speak, this movement.
Oh, absolutely. And that picture, as we talked about last week, that became kind of this iconic image, and that started spreading through social media. That was really how that took off, is through Twitter and Facebook. So social media is playing a big part. We've talked about, too, with the migrants using social media to find a path through Europe to communicate with people back home using apps like WhatsApp. So social media is playing a huge role in this refugee crisis, for sure, both for the refugees themselves and for people trying to draw attention to their plight.
And we just heard a moment ago from Luis that a lot of these refugees are sending back information to their people back in the country, like in Syria, and saying, hey, we can make it through now. Come on.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's the way that they're getting back to their folks at home and saying, okay, you can come forward, or touching base with people in Europe who are trying to shepherd them through, maybe family members who had already gone through, where they're trying to work with them to find a path through.
Right.
So it's playing a huge role for sure. Also trending today in the U.S., as we were talking about just before we went on, is Labor Day.
Yes,
so happy Labor Day to you. We are laboring away here, and that's what a lot of people are saying in social media. A lot of people that don't have off from work are saying they're laboring away. Other people are celebrating the last unofficial end of summer, as Labor Day is often called, with barbecues and things. And I saw a couple people actually tweeting out pictures of old pictures of child laborers and people working away in service jobs and saying, don't forget what this day really is. It's about people who are working. It's about the laborers who are making this country run. So nice sentiment for sure on Labor Day.
Well, thank you very much, Andrew, for stopping by.
Yeah, thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Gum diseases such as gingivitis or periodontitis can pose serious health risks for people. But now, scientists have found that an extract from wild blueberries can help prevent the formation of dental plaque that can lead to these ailments. The scientists say their discovery could lead to new therapies to fight gum disease. The early stage gum disease, gingivitis, occurs when oral bacteria forms a biofilm or plaque on teeth. This dental plaque can then harden into tartar, which then must be painfully scraped away by dentists. If gingivitis continues, the inflammation it causes can progress to a more serious infection called periodontitis, which can lead to tooth loss. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
While the term migrant has been used to describe the massive wave of people moving from Africa and the Middle East into Europe, many have fled military conflicts such as in Syria. International Edition's Jeffrey Young joins us. He has been almost exclusively focused on this crisis, and he's talked with many analysts and officials about it. Welcome, Jeffrey.
Hi, Susan. I turn to Joel Millman, spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration, to ask him about a definition of who is a migrant and who is a refugee. But we started out by discussing an EU rule called the Dublin Regulation, which says that refugees and asylum seekers must register in the first EU country they reach, and why that rule is not working under the weight of so many coming to the EU's borders.
Countries have been sort of at loggerheads with each other over this all year. Germany and, I believe, Czech Republic have both indicated that it's time to put it aside, at least during this current humanitarian emergency. It's been a way for countries north of the Mediterranean littoral to complain about the countries like Greece and Italy that take the migrants first, because they say, well, why are you not processing them and making them stay to do their asylum? And the answer has been, well, first of all, we're overwhelmed, and second of all, they don't want to be here. They want to be with family members in your countries. So at IOM, we were quite happy that someone stepped up and said maybe it's time to put that regulation aside, because it's just obviously impractical for this number of people that are crossing. And what's more, it's giving Europe sort of a red herring excuse to talk about why they can't make progress, because, first of all, let's get our border in order and let's make the rules work. That's not to say it's a bad idea. It's just it's not suited for something, an emergency like this with this many people.
So the people understand the difference. How do you discern who is a refugee seeking asylum and who is a migrant, someone who is just moving about looking for economic opportunity? What's the definition?
Well, there's a legal definition of actually of both, but refugee, the most important definition is that you must cross an international frontier. You must be fleeing conflict or distress. You cannot be someone, for example, dislodged by an earthquake or something like that. It really has to be related to some kind of armed conflict or forced displacement frontier, so you can't be an internally displaced person and claim to be a refugee. There are those who think everyone should be called a refugee, but at IOM what we say is refugee is a subset of migrant, and just as asylum seeker is a subset of refugee. We point out that there are many, many people who start out as job seekers and then things happen to them, they become victims of trafficking, you know, along the way, and then in extreme cases, they could easily be considered refugees, you know, further up the chain. The other thing that's important to remember is that asylum seeker, someone, a subset of the refugee, is not necessarily someone fleeing a country like Syria that's got a declared war, you know, and that the world community takes as someone by definition a refugee because they come from certain countries. We like migrant because it covers the wide range of people that we consider our constituency.
That was Joel Millman, spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration in Geneva, defining the difference between migrants and refugees.
There seems to be a growing number of officials and analysts saying that the EU has to redo its rules and policies to reflect the reality that it faces what might be or might very well be the biggest immigration since the Second World War.
I have heard many of them saying just that, Susan.
Well, thank you for stopping by.
I'll be back again.
Coming up on International Edition, is longer life worth living? And a possible misunderstanding about one superstar's wealth. There's both good news and bad news about life expectancy. The good news is people are living longer. The bad news is there's a bigger risk of poor health. My colleague Joe DiCapo has been looking at a new report on the issue and joins me here in the studio. And it's the first time I think Joe has been in here. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you very much for having me.
Joe, what did you find out?
Well, Susan, around the world, life expectancy has risen by 6 years since 1990, pretty good news. But the study says much of that is due to advances against HIV/AIDS and also malaria. Also, progress has been made in reducing deaths from communicable diseases and also maternal, newborn, and nutritional disorders. Theo Voss is the lead author of that study. He's a professor of global health at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington. And he tells me there's been a marked reduction in mortality rates from just about all causes.
Most importantly, all the infectious diseases that affect young children, the neonatal problems, so the problems following birth. But we've also seen very steady declines in injury deaths, and the rates of mortality from some of the big non-communicable diseases are slowly, or a bit more than slowly, declining as well.
For many, however, the quality of life in those extra years may be marred by health problems. Once again, Professor Voss.
You increase the average lifespan of people, and with increasing age, you are more likely to get diseases that impair your ability to function. While we've been relatively successful at reducing the big causes of death, we've been less successful in making a dent in these causes of long-term disabilities.
Voss says some diseases and disabilities can be prevented, but he says investment in both treating or curing them has not kept pace with investments for major diseases.
So we make a plea to medical research community to start thinking about investing more in those big causes of disability rather than mortality. And hopefully that will lead to some of the breakthroughs that we've seen that have led to the reduction in mortality.
Say, Joe, what did the scientists base the report on?
Well, the findings are based on an analysis of all major diseases and injuries in 188 countries. And Professor Voss says the goal is to find opportunities to improve health.
Well, thanks, Joe, for sharing with us, and don't be such a stranger.
Right. Live long and prosper.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Susan.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Musician and humanitarian Bono of the Irish rock band U2 was reported to have joined the Billionaires Club last week. But International Edition's David Byrd and VOA's Ray McDonald found out that while he might not be a billionaire yet, Bono is still making plenty of money.
Ray, this was some miscalculation or a little misrepresentation on the part of some of the folks who put this out there, right?
Yeah, they were a little too quick out of the gate, Dave, but it's still an interesting story. Earlier this week, outlets reported that Bono had become a billionaire and was now the world's richest pop star, surpassing Andrew Lloyd Webber and Paul McCartney. But the fact is, he's not. Here's what happened. Back in 2004, Bono formed a private equity group called Elevation Partners. And in 2009 and 2010, they bought about a 2% stake in Facebook. That initial investment is now worth more than $1 billion. When people saw that $1 billion mark, they kind of went nuts. They said, okay, Bono's a billionaire now. But what they forgot to mention was that that sum has to be distributed among Bono and his partners.
Beautiful day. Sky falls, you feel like it's a beautiful day.
Now, this is not the first time that people have been saying that Bono joined the Billionaires Club, though. That's happened a couple of years ago, too, right?
Right, exactly. I think back in 2012, when Facebook went public, people said, yeah, Bono, you're in the money now. And he said, well, not quite.
Not quite, but let's put it this way. He's not flying coach.
His band U2 is doing just fine, thank you. Forbes estimates that U2 has earned nearly $500 million over the last 10 years alone, and U2 has been together for over 35 years.
And their tour, now their tour, their most recent tour is the, well, the one in 2011 was the U2 360 tour. They're also on a North American leg of the Innocence and Experience tour.
Right.
And tickets for these things are not cheap. I mean, the band gets some of that money, too, plus the merchandising and all that other kind of stuff.
Of course. Absolutely. So Bono's doing fine.
If you want to comment on this story, maybe you think that Bono shouldn't be a billionaire, or, hey, if you can make all the money you want, go for it. Anyway, you can send us a tweet. Send one to Ray. He is at Ray on the Hits on Twitter. You can also send one to at @VOA_music. And you can listen for Ray to count down the top 20 and the top 5 songs every week by logging on to our website, voanews.com.
We'd like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the first Monday of September every year, America pauses to honor its workers and the contributions they make to our nation's strength and prosperity. The notion that work is valued, and even noble, dates to the ancients. "Seest thou a man diligent in his labor?" the book of Proverbs asks. "He shall stand before kings." In the United States, the belief goes back well over a century. As a holiday, the Labor Day celebration began in the 1880s in New York City with an effort by labor unions to demonstrate the numbers, strength, and spirit of working men and women. They organized parades and rallies and used the demonstrations to press for new laws to benefit workers, such as standardizing the 8-hour workday. The movement spread to other cities, and in 1894, Congress made it a national holiday honoring all American workers. The association with trade and labor unions has declined over the years. Today, for most people, the holiday represents the last long weekend of summer, a time to relax and spend time with family and friends. There are still parades and rallies, particularly in election years, and also sporting events and picnics. For many, Labor Day means a no Labor Day before the change of seasons and start of a new school year. Over time, work in the U.S. itself has changed. More Americans now are occupied in offices and services than who toil on the factory floor. The connection between the holiday and the nation's workers remains real, though, as recognition of the source of so much of America's economic and social achievements.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.